Okay, well, it is time now for our Lily White Spotlight feature this morning, as we do each and every Tuesday morning at around about this time, 10 past to quarter past 10. And so far, we have been to Ardclough, Alan Wood, Rathcoffey, Ballymore, Eustace, Moon and Timalyn. And this morning, we're making the short trip from Ardclough, actually, out to Strafford. And on the line now is Owen Corrie, local historian and a resident in that area. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Owen.
You were with us when we discussed Ardclough, so we'll change tack now and put on the blue and white of Strafford to talk a little bit about this village and what a gorgeous place it is.
Pretty much very, very high score in the Tidy Towns every year. The location is splendid. It's, you know, about a mile from the Liffey. The actual Liffey used to flood heavily in the area where the bridge of Strafford is. The bridge is about just over 250 years old. And the site was used from, you know, the old churches from about 1350. That's where the graveyard is today. Picturesque little village, largely built by the owners of Strafford House. And in the recent years, considerable additions have been made to that. But it has kept its character.
How would it have changed down through the years then, Owen? You mentioned there the owners of Strafford House, which is the K Club now, I believe, isn't it? So how would that have changed down through the years to the Strafford that we know now?
The important owners of Strafford House were the Barton family through six generations. Now, they bought the original Strafford House, burned down in 1850. And if you think the new one looks very French, it's because it's based on the Chateau de Louvain in France. But the Barton family had made their money out of wine. B&G Wines would be familiar to listeners. They sold out their shareholding in that in the 1960s. But relatives still run the Barton vineyards in France. They're high-quality, high-end wines. Barton Leoville would be setting you back about €120 a bottle. So they built the house. They had pots of money in the early days. They also built most of those little cottages, very picturesque cottages, that score so highly in the Tidy Towns. Unfortunately, when Bertram Barton fell off his horse in the 1920s and died, his son Derek discovered that the whole estate was insolvent. So one of the important things that happened there was local people managed to buy back their homes and began to... Strafford sort of sat there in that wonderful, sleepy little state it was until the 1990s. It had a population of, let's say, 300 in the 1990s. And then Michael Smurfit bought the house, turned it into the K Club, very famous golf facility. 2006, they staged the Ryder Cup. And in recent years, Michael Featherston has bought it from Smurfit and invested very heavily, not just in the house, the land, the domain, but also in the community. Very, very welcome development. In the meantime, our population has come up close to 1,000. There's lots of new housing estates being built and being sold off at the moment.
And like a lot of villages around the county and around the country, there is a main crossroads through the village and everything is kind of off those crossroads. And in Strafford, you have up to one side, the Glebe, out towards the National School. You've Lover's Lane and the Ardras Road up to the right where Strafford GAA is, the Steam Museum and Strafford AFC. And then straight out, you have the Barberstown Road. So if we just focus on that crossroads a little bit, Owen, and talk a bit more about what's in that area.
Interesting one, because there's an old road out to Ardras, and Ardras is where St. Patrick's Well and St. Patrick's Church, probably one of the two oldest sites. The other one is in the graveyard, as they say. Very boggy, very flooded. The road that goes by Barberstown, you would miss Strafford, because most people travelling Selbridge, Clane, Eden Derry, all that road, the 120 bus has to come into Strafford. Big fight to actually get them, because it was bypassing the town. And Barberstown, a very famous castle, two hugely famous owners. One of them was Lady Tyrconnell, Lady Talbot, way back. Her husband is mentioned in the music, that's the theme music for the BBC World Service, Lady Valera. But the second famous owner was Eric Clapton. His music, much more well known and much more famous. And then that stretch of village, it's a very short stretch between the crossroads with the Catholic Church and another crossroads, which is the Church of Ireland, built in the French style because it was built by the Barton family. The sacristan used to say, built to the glory of God and the Barton family, and not necessarily in that honor, in that order. The main shop in the village is there. So you have this sense of one shop, one little tavern at the other end of the town, the two churches, and all these wonderfully decorated cottages, a lot of work done by local residents. That's where a lot of the scores in the tidy towns accumulate. Strathaan came close to winning the national award about 11 or 12 years ago, and they always do well in Kildare, usually top of the county.
What can you tell us about the GAA club there, Owen? Because, of course, Strathaan winning the junior championship in 2022. They've had success in the intermediate football championship down through the years as well. I know underage they form St Edward's along with Ardclough and Rathcoffey, but what about Strathaan GAA itself?
One of the oldest in the county. Some say the first football match in the county was played. First football brought into the county in the 1880s. We actually have Strathaan playing in a match before the GAA had drawn up rules for Gaelic football. They more or less had local rules that they were working by. So on about a week before in February 1885, one of the first GAA matches in the county. Since then, you know, it's a very small population to work off, but they did get to intermediate. They did have very good, strong county football, as some would remember, the 1965 under-21 team. Tomás Walsh was on that, and they have done quite well in getting back up to intermediate in the last couple of years. They had a very good run at junior and went to Leinster in junior a couple of years ago. Always there, always vibrant, and hard-working local committee, developed the grounds very well, and working off the constricts of a small population. Very often the GAA thrives when you have that tremendous village loyalty. Strathaan AFC has also got a very, very proud track record in a much shorter history. Than the GAA, and of course one of the things that's happened in recent years as we expanded is a lot of pretty famous people have come to live in Strathaan, and one of the more beloved members of the local community has a strong track record on both GAA and soccer. His name is Niall Quinn.
Absolutely, and he's just one of many, as you say, that have moved into the local area, and there's some gorgeous houses on the outskirts of the town. I'm thinking particularly Castle Dillon and some of those other places as well. We just had a message in on 0833 97 97 97, Owen, that says, don't forget, of course, Des Fox and that fantastic butterfly farm that was out in Strathaan at one stage.
One of the attractions is the butterfly farm. It was an amazing, it was a labour of love. It was a great visit by many, many people. We also had a couple of other show farms in the area that were open at various stages. The Steam Museum, another labour of love, and it's accumulated memorabilia from different steam engines, and part of the church that was the Great Southern Western Railway Church that was in Inchicore. That's open during the summer. Coffee served there. One of the developments of COVID was it's post-COVID is to open a coffee shop, and a fantastic coffee shop in the village. Well worth travelling to have your latte or your cappuccino is Quirk Cafe. Certainly, Strathaan has moved from being a town that you drove through to being a magnet for visitors in its own right. And it's one of the things that happened during COVID was we had a great rediscovery of our local attractions in County Kildare.
Okay, two final points that I want to put to you about the village of Strathaan, Owen. Will I be right in saying that the Strathaan Inn has quite a lot of history attached to it as well, particularly maybe in the late 1800s and the early 1920s? And also, if you could maybe touch on the train station that was once in Strathaan, maybe a lot of people might not know that.
Oh, beautiful train station. It's 2 miles outside the village, between Strathaan and Ardclough. Little red brick house where the post office was sent. It was put up in 1902. At one stage, the post office was 2 miles outside the village. The reason was all the post. Everything came by train. Lovely little villa station house, and a very ornate ironwork pedestrian bridge, which was taken down and moved to Port Arlington. The station closed. It ran for 99 years and closed in 1947, and then it finally closed for all, even the special trains, in 1963. So it talk about reopening it, but it's never really happened. The Strathaan Inn was a centre for rebels One of the forgotten pieces of Strafford history is that a lot of the rebels who joined Aylmer's army and who fought until the Battle of Ovidstown Hill, which isn't that far away, they congregated in Strafford and marched from there. And you'll find among the list of their rebels, the owners of the Strafford Inn at the time. Strafford Inn was quite recently bought by the K Club and has been invested in its own right. Still keeping that village pub feel to it. And if you're lucky, you'll get some lovely music from one of the local residents, David Houston, there, if you call around.
Great stuff. Well, that's our whistle stop tour of the village of Strafford this morning on the Lily White Spotlight feature here on Kildare today. And as always, thanks indeed to local historian Owen Curry. Thanks, Owen.
And keep up the great work, Owen.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, I came across an article over the course of the weekend written by Ian Taylor, who is a senior lecturer in psychology at Loughborough University. And it started off by saying that February is the month of shattered dreams and ambitions. The trainers are gathering dust and chocolate bars have replaced protein bars. The gusto with which we attacked our New Year's resolutions is a vague memory. And that is with particular reference to exercise and maybe those, January motivations that we had. Well, on the line is Rob McCabe. He's a physiotherapist based here in Kildare. Good morning, Rob, and thanks for taking our call.
Hi, Owen. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. Some of the figures around this said that 80% of people will have given up on their New Year's resolutions by February. Is it hard to keep that motivation going that maybe we started the year off with?
Yeah, these are the figures that come out every year. For health professionals, it's a little bit of a Groundhog Day scenario, and people are probably sick to the teeth of us all always going on about it around this time of year. But the stats are there, and they're the same every year. 50%, so gym memberships generally go up by about 50% in January, and that's obviously people with the best intentions. And we're at that time right now. Come that second week in February, they drop off by about 80%. And it's a huge chunk of people that don't adhere to whatever those goals were that they set out in the new year. And it's to try and figure out why is this huge dropout rate and why is it so consistent every year?
Yeah, I was looking as well at maybe things that could be done, that people could do to make it a bit easier to exercise and to keep fit, because it's kind of like a myth in January that when you exercise, you have to hit the ground running and exercise extremely hard. So maybe that's the reason the people start off, they're sweating, they are training every night of the week and they think they're doing a great thing. But that's obviously not sustainable.
Yeah, and I think Ian Taylor, in fairness, he sets that out. He sets it out in the article that you're referring to here, Owen. And that boils down to our expectations of what we're actually getting into here. Sometimes our goals that we set can be quite unrealistic. And again, while we have the best intentions with these goals, our expectations are somewhat far-fetched. And that's in search of this instant gratification. We think that, great, let's start an exercise regime. And when we don't start seeing the benefits, or at least the benefits that we think we should be getting from that, we tend to fall off the bandwagon a little bit. And I think, again, we need to be in this for the long haul. This isn't a... And there's benefits to exercise, which we go on about all the time. I mean, the evidence there is unequivocal. We know they're there. And again, health professionals, we harp on about this. That's not what's sinking in with people. I'm starting to think that sometimes we don't necessarily need to know that it's for cardiovascular benefits, that it's for bone health, that it's for muscle strength, and ultimately this is longevity. We need to break it down into actual real day benefits that we're going to see. And I'm not talking about weight loss. I'm not talking about dropping a dress size or getting into a smaller size pair of jeans or something. It's the daily benefits that we'll see in terms of, let's say, for example, not being out of breath, going up a couple of flights of stairs in the office or a shopping centre, or being able to carry our child if need be, if they fall, that we have the adequate flexibility to bend over, to pick them up. I think sometimes these are the things that get lost, and we get, channeled into this weight loss, let's look good. mentality rather than a bigger picture that I think we only sometimes see as we mature or as we get older. We actually see these real life benefits rather than the sometimes more superficial ones.
Yeah, I think that's an important point that you make, that, you know, the majority of people who would have maybe joined the gym in January or set out those New Year's resolutions would have wanted to lose weight. But come now into February, how realistic is it that you would start seeing those drastic changes within the space of a month? Probably low, I'd say.
Very low, because you said a word there, drastic changes. They're not drastic changes, or certainly not in the short term, they're not drastic changes. It needs to be more thought out. In other words, you're in this for the long haul. This isn't something, and I think taking the emphasis away from that drastic change of weight loss is one step to achieve that. Now, there are, like I said, there are some benefits. We can reduce stress fairly immediately post-exercise, during and post-exercise, through the release of these wonderful, wonderful chemicals in our body. We can get enjoyment out of. And again, this is another point I would allude to. Enjoyment. Sometimes I think we pick the wrong mode of exercise. There has never been a greater variety of exercises out there to choose from, be that gym classes, which isn't for everyone, but move beyond that. Move beyond even that gym environment. And the gyms won't thank me for this, but what about outside, on your doorstep? My God, over COVID and pandemic lockdowns, I've never seen so many people out walking around the community or starting to get involved and meeting up. And I think, and again, the third point would be the social aspect of this, meeting up in groups. And it doesn't need to be huge distances that you're taking on. It can be something that you enjoy, but I think you need to find enjoyment in whatever mode of activity it is that you choose.
What about those people who might be listening this morning, Rob, and are in that cohort that started off very well but have now, you know, fallen off the wagon, so to speak, and are kind of thinking, sure, there's no point in going back to it. I've lost that motivation. It wasn't working out for me. And now, you know, well, I'll just wait until next January comes around. How easy is it to get back into that rhythm and routine?
I'm not saying it's easy, and we have to be honest here, and we have to accept that it's not easy. One, it's not easy to make the decision to start the exercise, and for those poor individuals who've fallen off the bandwagon, now they have to find themselves having to start again. So there is a reset button here. Now, I'm going to refer to Ian Taylor here, who, bear in mind, by trade is a psychologist. I'm a physiotherapist, but there are huge psychological aspects to this. And again, no one likes failure. But it's about getting up, back on the saddle, and going at this again with a different frame of mind and maybe with a slightly different outlook and goals. So I go back to these goals. They need to be realistic. They need to be things that you're going to enjoy. They need to be things that you're going to achieve. And maybe you need to have a sit down and literally jot these things out a little bit. If there's a longer term goal, fantastic. If they're shorter term goals, great. But they might actually end up being a little bit more longer term than you actually think.
Yeah, some good advice there. And if you want to check out the article, by the way, that we've been referencing there, it's from Ian Taylor of Loughborough University. It's under the headline, 3 Tips to Keep You Exercising All Year Long. And 80% of us give up on New Year exercise plans by February. Only 20% of us keep going. That's Rob McCabe, physiotherapist based here, of course, in Kildare, with that advice and analysis. Thanks again for joining us, Rob, and a very good morning to you.
Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare today on 0833 97 97 97.
Let's go back to local issues then, and to the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, where Fine Gael Councillor Tim Durkin is on the line. Morning, Tim.
Morning, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. First of all, you wanted the council to provide an update and a progress report on all proposed upgrade works to the M4 motorway in the Clane Maynooth Municipal District.
Yeah, indeed. So the Kilcock to Maynooth section was completely resurfaced there about 2 years ago, and it was envisaged for the Maynooth to Leixlip section to be done as well. But now there's proposed upgrade works, or the kind of a change of tack somewhat. The possible addition of a third carriageway or bus lane, a new interchange for Maynooth west of the current one, resurfacing obviously as well, and then upgrading. The initial plan was to upgrade the current interchange. That has changed somewhat, and unfortunately I wouldn't agree with it. The proposed plan at the moment which is not finalised, would be to decommission the current interchange and build a new one. So capacity of interchanges is kind of dictated by their proximity to each other. So cars slowing down to come off the motorway and speeding up gradually to go onto the motorway. So the magic number is 2 kilometres. If they're 2 kilometres apart, they have no effect on each other. But if they're closer than that, they would have a significant impact. So what I would like to see happen is to push the new interchange out as far as what I would call the Jackson Bridge flyover on the motorway, and upgrade the existing one to allow for 2 interchanges for the town.
Okay, that's to do with the M4 motorway. Similarly then, in terms of maybe more local roads, you wanted an update on the Selbridge and Kilcock Road and the Maynooth upgrade projects.
Yeah, so they were two projects that were funded initially through LPT money to do a detailed design in relation to both. Both of which have been on the cards for quite a long time. Selbridge Road has 2 schools opposite each other, the Educate Together and the Gael School, with about 750 students combined in the 2 schools. Unfortunately, there is a little bit of a problem with NTA funding at the moment, so I'm going to have to go a little bit higher in terms of finding funding for that to make sure that project comes to fruition.
Okay, where could you possibly get funding then if the NTA funding is not available? Where else can you go?
Well, you go up the ladder to the minister in charge, which would be Pascal Donoghue, to ensure that NTA funding is made available. This road has been on the cards for quite some time, as has it's essentially Mill Street and the Kilcock Road Junction. Both roads have national schools within close proximity to them, so it's really important to get these projects done, finalised, for the safety of the children going to school.
Okay, if we go out to Lara Bryan West in Maynooth, you say there's a number of accidents at that location. You wanted an update on the road realignment works. What did the council say in response?
Yeah, so they haven't got it on a 3-year plan. Unfortunately, this area, if anyone knows the road travelling between Maynooth and Kilcock, there's quite a twisty section after Lara Bryan Cemetery on the way to Kilcock. Unfortunately, there has been a number of accidents and fatalities at this location. I was chatting to one local resident. He has probably rebuilt his wall 6 times in the past 18 months where cars have come through his wall or hit his wall in some way. I'm meeting the area engineer out there probably next Friday, the following Friday.
Right, what's the speed limit out there, Tim?
Speed limit 60.
Right.
And it's 60 for very good reason. It just as you get past the bends, it goes back up to 80 again. But at 60 from before those bends, all the way as far as the roundabout at Maynooth University, and then it drops down to 50. So it's quite clear. I did request a speed and quantity survey, traffic quantity survey, which came back and showed clearly that there is a speeding issue at that location. So it's one problem is that there's not a clear line of sight. So if you're coming around that first bend, you can't actually see if there's a car turning right into a house. There's a number of houses along there. So one cheap way of resolving the problem would be to level down the bank a little bit more and to give a clear line of sight through the entire bend.
All right. Finally then, this morning, Tim, you wanted a progress report on the proposed business campus in Kilcock. Where are we in terms of a timeline here for the business campus?
Absolutely. Well, consultants have been appointed. I was at a meeting only just 10 days ago with Kilcock Business Association, and there was a briefing given about the proposed enterprise park in Kilcock at that meeting. Consultants will be meeting the businesses in the coming months to assess, one, the viability of the site itself, which is council-owned land just outside the town on the far side of the motorway, but also to get an idea of what businesses want to come into Kilcock or what businesses wish to move. Some businesses are ideally suited to be in the town. Some businesses are more suited to be outside the town, and that consultation process will establish exactly how many businesses want to move to this site. Kilcock has a strong history of business. It had a higher rate of evaluation than I think Salbridge and Leixlip put together at one stage. So it's a very important project to get over the line for the businesses in Kilcock, to make sure that the businesses that are there have room to expand, but also to attract in new businesses. Because what I've seen in the past is that, unfortunately, some businesses have wanted to expand, no room to do so, and they ended up moving to another town, or in some instances, another county.
Okay, that is Fine Gael councillor on the Claymanuth Municipal District, Tim Durkin. Thanks for your time, Tim. We'll be going back to the Claymanuth Municipal District after the break with Labour councillor Angela Feeney. But just before that, I want to bring you an update on the situation in Turkey and Syria. Of course, you will have heard over the last day or so that rescuers in the two countries are braving freezing conditions, freezing temperatures, aftershocks and collapsing buildings as they dig for survivors buried by a string of earthquakes that has now officially killed more than 5,000 people. The confirmed death toll across the two countries has soared after a number of strong tremors near the Turkey-Syria border, the largest of which measured 7.8 on the Richter scale. Turkish and Syrian disaster response teams reported that more than 5,600 buildings have been flattened across several cities, including many multi-story apartment blocks. Overnight, survivors used their bare hands to pick up and turn over the twisted ruins of multi-story buildings, trying to save family, friends and anyone else sleeping inside when the first quake struck early yesterday morning. Some people, you know, obviously wandering around with a sense of disbelief being widespread as residents struggle to comprehend the scale of the disaster. Some of the heaviest devastation occurred near the quake's epicenter. That was between Karanmaras and Gaziantep, the city of 2 million, where entire blocks now lie in ruins under gathering snow. You may have seen yesterday on the news, and I kind of had to double take, it is snowing over there in Turkey and Syria, which we would kind of, you know, always associate as being extremely hot. But obviously now that it's into their winter, it is snowing. Residents tried to clear a mountain of masonry, plasterboard and furniture that had been a multi-story building. Another collapsed nearby, sending crowds screaming and clamouring for safety. We also heard that Ghana international winger Christian Atsu was buried under the rubble. He used to play for Newcastle and Chelsea. He was found alive after being buried under the rubble, though, and that was confirmed by the vice president of his current club, Hatayas Spor. Atsu, who plays for the club, was reported missing in Turkey's Hatay province. He was pulled out injured, and Taner Savut, who is the sporting director of the club, is still under the rubble. So that's the latest that we have there. It has been confirmed that the number of people killed has surpassed 5,000, and obviously now there's lots of international aid being brought in to Turkey and Syria, and we'll keep you up to date on what happens throughout the course of the day here on KFM.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Yeah, very shortly we'll have the weekend sports review. Mixed fortunes for the Kildare teams that were in action over the weekend. The footballers losing out to Cork, while the hurlers had a great win against Carlow, and the ladies footballers were victorious against Clare. And Angela Feeney is on the line, Labour councillor on the Claymanuth Municipal District based in Maynooth. And a good result for the club yesterday in the under-23A final, Angela, defeating Naas.
Oh, we're on high in this house, Owen, because Barry, my husband, is involved with that team. So were thrilled, and a huge congratulations to them in a nail-biting match, really. The excitement right up to the wire, but both teams were fantastic, but obviously I'm thrilled for the under-23s here in Maynooth. Great win.
Yeah, absolutely. We had updates and commentary with Seamus Dillon. They finished 1-12 at the end of normal time. Maynooth, though, kicking on in extra time, winning by a single point, 114-113. We'll have more on that very shortly, but well done to all involved in Maynooth GAA. If we stay in the town then, Angelan, it seems as though there's bins galore on Doctors Lane. What's happening?
Yeah, that's right, Owen. I mean, for those of you that know, Doctors Lane is a very, very busy lane. A lot of pedestrians use it, school users going over to the Presentation Girls School and people accessing the main street. But it's also used a lot by the traffic that wants to avoid the main street. And in recent months, Owen, more and more bins are being placed on the footpaths, which make it really unsafe for pedestrians and people with buggies or wheelchair users who've been in touch with me. You know, they send me photographs, I see it myself. They end up having to step out onto the busy road because the bins are obstructing their way. But also sight lines for motorists, you know, it's made it more dangerous. So it just needs a bit of attention because it's become unsafe. So the council said in its response that under the waste management bylaws, waste containers should be removed from roadways and footpaths no later than 8 a.m. on the day after collection. Now, that's not happening at the minute with some of the businesses. So look, the community warden said that he'll contact the businesses concerned and make it safer for all.
OK, let's go to O'Neill Park then in Maynooth. You wanted pencil bollards to be installed at the grass verges there. First of all, what are pencil bollards? And secondly, why do you want them installed there?
Yeah, they're kind of those. They actually look, the top of them looks a bit like, you know, the rubber top at the top of your pencil. And they look a little bit more, you know, they're not as unsightly as bollards, and they're low-lying.
Yeah.
But also, the reason I asked for those, Owen, is that great work was done recently by the council on the footpaths and the grass verges in O'Neill Park. But sadly, some drivers have been using the estate to turn around, especially if there's a traffic build-up from Tesco or Carton Retail Park. Motorists decide to dodge into the estate to do a U-turn, and the verges are being destroyed. So the pencil bollards would be an attempt to actually make sure that couldn't happen and to protect the grass verges. So a district engineer has agreed to meet me on site with some of the residents, and we'll discuss the issue and see what we can do about it.
Okay, and finally then, you were looking for upgrade works, or what the plans were for upgrade works to the council housing stock in the municipal district.
Yeah, some good news there, Owen. Obviously the council does its usual maintenance work that it does in response to maintenance works that people who live in council houses need. That's done on a usual basis. But there's also refurbishment works being progressed for vacant units, which is very important to get them back into the stock. But I was glad to hear that we got good news to say that our municipal district has been selected for the Energy Efficiency Retrofit Programme for 2023, and we'll be getting details of the location and number of units to be retrofitted. That's really, really good, because that's to bring them up to a BER, maybe as close to a BER B rating as we can. And there's also a number of housing units will benefit from the upcoming windows and doors upgrade. That's part of the countrywide or countywide scheme this year. So about 100 homes in the county will benefit from that. So good news there, Owen, because obviously we need to get more homes, energy efficient homes in the housing stock for the county.
Okay, Labour councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Angela Feeney. Thanks for joining us, Angela. And we turn our attentions now to local GAA, and we'll get to that under-23A final between Maynooth and Naas in a few moments. But first of all, let's start off on the inter-county scene, and Ger McNally is with us now. Good morning, Ger.
Good morning, Owen.
Mixed weekend for Kildare inter-county teams. We'll get to the hurlers and the women's footballers in due course, but the men's footballers finished up Cork 2-14, Kildare 7 points. Kildare only registering 2 points in the first half, and was it 26, 27 minutes until they got that first point?
Yeah, do we really have to talk about this game again? Unfortunately, it was one of those days again that we've come a little bit too accustomed to, really, with Kildare over the last, probably, whatever, 8, 9, 10 years, in that it was just a game without any positives whatsoever. And I suppose the big thing with this one is that generally those games that have involved kind of really difficult days and horrible defeats for Kildare have generally been at Croke Park, but for this one to happen in St. Collins Park kind of rubbed even more salt into the wounds. And it was as bad a performance as Kildare produced in Newbridge against what, like, you know, we have to say, a big,
Now, DF Cork were very impressive on the day in the way they defended. They were very well organised, but at the end of the day, they're a mid-table and Division 2 side. They're not All-Ireland challengers, and a lot of Kildare defeats have come against the very best sides, but to be so well beaten by a side that Kildare would like to consider at least their equal was really disappointing, and it was just absolutely no positives to take from the game whatsoever.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got off now to a very poor start, albeit only two games in, but two very important games, losing to Dublin and now losing to Cork. And when you think we still have the likes of Meath and Derry to play, Clare as well, which is the next game, that'll be tough going down to Ennis. So, you know, it's kind of hard to see where wins are going to start coming from, Ger.
Yeah, and of course, people know this year as well that, you know, at other times, at other years, maybe you were saying it's only two games played in the league. But of course, the league is tied into the championship the way the structures are for this season. So theoretically, Kildare could finish fifth or sixth in the league and still not qualify for the Sam Maguire Cup and end up having to play in the Tarleton Cup in the summer. Certainly, if they finish in the relegation places, bar reaching a provincial final and with Kildare on the same side of the draw as Dublin up to the semi-finals, that's going to be really difficult to do. So, Kildare quite conceivably could find themselves in the Tarleton Cup now without a serious upturn in results, and that has to start in the next game because, as you said, there's some difficult games ahead and there's some real kind of relegation or, you know, Tarleton Cup four-pointers ahead because, you know, the way trips now to Clare and Limerick coming up soon, they take on a huge significance. And, you know, it's a pity because going into last Sunday, when I was speaking before, I think about last week, we were talking about maybe the home games being absolutely crucial against potential promotion rivals. But now, after that defeat on Sunday, unfortunately, we're looking at a different landscape for the team. And I'm sure there's been a lot of soul-searching by the management in the last couple of days. They probably haven't slept great, the players themselves as well, but I'm sure they're getting back to business in the training field tonight. But they'll have to come up with something different because as much as there were some positives to take from the first game against Dublin, as I said, there was just nothing to hang your hat off that performance on Sunday from a Kildare point of view. And things will have to greatly improve in the coming weeks if Kildare are to avoid that kind of nightmare scenario of relegation to Division 3 and having to play in that Tarleton Cup in the summer.
Let's hear from the manager, Glenn Ryan.
It maybe went wrong thinking it was a decent performance last week and an assumption that it was going to be enough to get us over the line here. We were happy with our application last week. Wouldn't think we're necessarily happy with our performance. Whereas this week, I wouldn't be happy with either our performance or our application. And even up to half-time was an indication that what we expected to say from an application perspective was in there. We expected to be better in the second half, and unfortunately it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, next up for Kildare, they've a break this weekend and they play Clare on the 19th of February. That's a trip down to Ennis to take on the Banner County. If we look at the hurlers, Ger, they continued their fine form and they had a comfortable win over Carlow on Saturday. Maybe going under the radar a little bit, but people now starting to sit up and take notice of what has been a fantastic last few months from the hurlers. I think 11 wins in a row now.
Yeah, that goes back to last year's Christy Ring and league campaign. And I think the first time I spoke about the hurlers this year after one of the Joe Cup games, I said this has the potential to be a huge year for Kildare. And really, they deserve an awful lot more backing than they get from around the county because the work that David Hertie and his management team have done going in now into his fourth year, and of course the players themselves, it's fantastic. And they look like a really strong side. To be quite honest, I don't think it was much of a surprise that the defeat of Carlow was such a wide margin, even though it was the first away win in Carlow in over 50 years. Carlow are a little bit under strength, and I think most people would have expected Kildare to win. Maybe the fact that it was so comfortable in the second half, a slight surprise, but certainly anything other than a Kildare win, I think would have been a bit of a shock there on Saturday. But that just shows the kind of the level that Kildare are at the moment. They move very confidently on to a game that against Down on Sunday. Interestingly enough, that a home tie has been played in Hawkfield. I think maybe perhaps David Hertie and his team perhaps feel that a little bit of a larger pitch in Hawkfield suits them better than the tight confines of St. Connaught Park. So, it's a big opportunity and there's some winnable games for Kildare. I think Derry are the ones that follow on, and then it'll really ramp up then in the last couple of rounds of the league. I think it's a home game against Kerry and then finish up away to Offaly, which really will determine how Kildare finish out the season. But I'd have to give a special mention just to Keane Boren and indeed the Boren family as well, because we've often spoken about them in the past. Ryan and Conan have made their mark in the last couple of years, but Keane was involved with the NACBS footballers on the Friday afternoon, a really tough Leinster schools
semi-final when the nice CBS side qualified for a fifth successive final. A fantastic achievement in itself. But less than 24 hours later, then Keane was out turning out and making his first league start for the Kildare senior hurlers as an 18-year-old, and he was superb. I thought he was a really lively presence in the full forward line. And of course, it was the first time then that the three Boren brothers had started a league game as well for Kildare. So a very proud moment for the family and club. And it certainly won't be the last time you see those three brothers lining up for Kildare. They have a huge future in front of them all. And at the moment, for the Kildare hurlers.
Absolutely. So far, so good for the hurlers. Winning the Keogh Cup, winning the first league game then against Carlow. And here's manager David Herity.
There's a lot of things that we weren't doing in the Keogh Cup. Like there was balls hitting the ground. Our support play just wasn't there coming out of defence. A few times up front as well. We were giving away a few silly frees there from obviously throwing the ball. But obviously over-carrying as well. That all comes down to just the support run is just not there coming through quick enough. Coming out of defence as well, we shouldn't be over-carrying it. We shouldn't be coming into the tackles. There's no need for it. There should be support off the shoulder, which was there in the second half. And then the lads did brilliantly then. They got some brilliant shots off over the bar. I was very happy with that second half, all right.
Yeah, so also a good start to the league campaign for the women. They made it 3 wins from 3 in Division 3 of the National Football League. They had a 2-point victory against Clare in Coora Clare out on the west coast over the weekend, 9-7. A great start, Ger, for Diane O'Hora. And that's, I know Tara Byrne was at that game for us, but that sounded like a real bruising battle, 9-7.
Yeah, without having seen the game, I just listened to Tara's reports on Sunday and read a few reports since. That's an outstanding win for the Anna Horace team. You know, it's all well and good winning a couple of home games previously, as they did when they were the better side, obviously, in the day and ran up big scores and big victories. But to go down to Clare, who are traditionally a difficult opponent for Kildare, they were behind for the large majority of the first half, certainly, and into the second half then as well by a couple of points. And still, even when they got back level in the last 10 minutes, they went behind again by a point. And then to score, I think, the last 3 points to grind out the win is really, really impressive stuff. And, you know, often you can see more and learn more and think more of a team because they can grind out a win like that rather than, you know, scoring 4 goals and running up a big score in St. Connors Park. But when everything is going well, to be able to dig in deep like that and grind out an away win in Clare, yeah, suggests that Diana Hora very much has that team going in the right direction.
Yeah, and Diana Hora, after the game, made reference to how much of a battle it was in Coora Clare.
I suppose we have plenty of things that we can kind of improve on our first half. You know, coming down here away to Clare in, you know, conditions like this in a really, really soft pitch, it was a huge ask for the girls. And to come away after a win, I'm insanely proud. There's no question about it. I'm actually quite emotional after that match because they've never been involved in a physical battle, and I've never seen a battle as physical in as long as I've been around ladies football.
Yeah, Diana Hora there, the Kildare ladies manager. Let's turn our attentions then finally to the club scene. And Maynooth defeated Naas in what was a cracking game in St. Connolly's Park. It was the final outstanding game from the 2022 season, Under-23A final. It was 1-12 apiece at the end of normal time. Maynooth kicked on, though, in extra time and won by a single point, 114-113. And Seamus Dillon was there for us. Seamus, you might just summarise that game and... I think it's fair to say it was a cracker.
Yeah, Owen, absolutely a brilliant game of football. Maybe a little slow to get started. Naas did lead 6-4 at the half-time break. Were 6-2 ahead, but 2 quick points just before the break from Sean Heaver freeze brought it back to a 2-point game, and then the game opened up. Start of the second half, Maynooth hit 1-2 inside the opening 2 minutes of that. A Kevin Donovan point, then a Kevin Donovan goal after excellent work from the brilliant Cathal McCabe. And that put them 2 points in front, put them in front for the first time in the game. And when centre-half back Neil O'Sullivan, captain, he pointed then to put them 3 ahead. But Naas came back down the field and Kevin Cummings had a penalty that was saved by Keane Randall in the Maynooth goals. And it brought back to Cummings and he put that away to level it up again at 1-6 each. And from there to the full-time whistle, in 60 minutes, it was just point for point. And Naas did get 2 points in front of 1-9-1-7. But it was Maynooth who finished the strongest, and right on the 59 and a half minutes gone on the clock, it was Cathal McCabe who pointed to leave it at 1-12 each, and we headed for extra time. And at that stage, Naas had introduced Alex Byrne, who had been sent off on Sunday for playing for the Kildare seniors, but he was entitled to play, and he came in and gave a little bit of an injection to Nace, and he kicked the first point of extra time, to put that, which turned out to be Nace's only score in that 20 minutes of extra time. And when Sean Heaver levelled it up after 65 minutes, it could have went either way, but it was Manute with Cathal McCabe. He was on his knees on more than one occasion throughout that extra time period, had given so much to the cause, like all the Manute team and Nace, in fairness to them. It was a cracker of a game, and McCabe got himself up into the 20-metre line and tapped it over, and it was all hands to the deck then for Manute over the closing couple of minutes. Dermot Hanavan did have a chance to equalise late into injury time, but he missed, and you wouldn't blame Dermot for that, because he had an outstanding game for Manute as well, or for Nace as well. But yeah, good, and the double done by Manute, because they won the under-23 hurling final just before Christmas. But we had to wait on for this final because of that objection that went on before Christmas. But for anybody that got to Newbridge yesterday, it was well worth the wait, and Manute have some cracking footballers coming through.
Indeed. Well done to Manute. Commiserations, of course, to Nace, and thanks to Seamus Dillon for that update.